So I know that you create lots of videos. Like anytime I come to my Twitter, the timeline, I think at least every single day I would probably see one video from Dillion, whether it's a short form video, it's a long form, something from Dillion. So I guess my question is, how do you find the time?
My mom math was that I should do electrical for bachelor's, then for master's I do mechanical. Then at the end of the day, it is
Combine it
mechatronics.
too.
Yeah. I put that to educate people, like, guys, I make this mistake, don't make it. But everybody was like, yes, you deserve the punishment. Now it was a crazy time.
My name is Esther Adebayo, and on my tech journey with Esther, I sit down with tech folks to talk about how they've been able to handle rejections, overcome obstacles in their careers, and really cut through the hype. From coding mistakes to battling rejections, balancing work life, and even doing phenomenal things, my guests will share everything raw and real on my tech journey with Esther. New episodes drop every week, so you don't want to miss out. Hi, Dillion. How are you doing today?
Hi Esther, it's nice to be speaking with you. I'm
Yeah,
glad to be here.
it's good to have you on the podcast. You're one of the people I knew that I was going to invite when I was having the next season of this podcast. So it's good to have you.
Yeah,
Okay,
it's
so.
funny how time flies too, because it was like months ago we scheduled this, and I woke up this morning and I was like, oh, I have this today. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd been looking forward to it, so it's finally here and I'm happy. Okay, so I usually have an icebreaker on the podcast, and I have two questions here. You're gonna pick one and answer. So which one would you pick?
Maybe the one on your left.
This one.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. Let's see. Okay, so it says, what are the top three items on your bucket list. Top three items on your bucket list.
Good question.
Do you have a bucket list?
Well, I mean, bucket list isn't just where you want to travel to, right?
No,
It's
it
anything you want to
just
do.
anything, yeah.
I don't have like a bucket list I look at like every morning, so I'm just thinking what could be on the bucket list. Let's come back to that question later on.
Okay,
I'm thinking through
that's fair.
it.
That's fair. But I think for me, one thing, even though I don't know if I have three, but one thing on my bucket list right now is to learn how to swim. I don't know how to swim. Do you know how to swim?
That reminds me, learning how to drive is on my bucket list, but I don't know how to swim.
Okay, that's fine. Thank God I'm not the only one. So I need to learn how to swim. That's one of the huge things on my bucket list. Maybe later this year or sometime next year, but I've given myself like an ultimatum of next year, I should know how to swim. So we'll
Nice,
see.
nice,
Yeah,
nice.
we'll see about that. All right. So let's get started on the conversation. I know you're a developer educator, so how exactly was the journey to, being a developer educator from front-end engineering? I know you have a front-end engineering background, so how did that switch go?
Well, I don't think there was a switch, because even before my first front-end role, I was already teaching with articles. Then I was still doing
Okay.
articles. So developer educator is a it's a brand for me that how do I say it? Like, it's not like I transitioned from something to developer education. Developer education is something I do alongside every other thing I do with my full-time work. So even while I was doing front end, I was doing developer education. While I was an external developer advocate in my previous company, I was still doing developer education. Currently, still in the developer relations field, I'm still doing developer education, and I also see this brand like going on regardless of whatever role I have in the future. Well, maybe until I get tired. So developer education is not a this or that for me. It's kind of something I do outside work and sometimes even in my full-time work.
Okay, that's good to know, because I believe that you're doing really well. I was checking out your site and I saw that you have five different courses, four or five different courses. Like you have JavaScript Simplified, Simplified Git, Reject Simplified, TypeScript, Simple TypeScript. You just released that like video. So, you know, for anyone out there, if you're looking for like a step-by-step guide on any of these concepts, check out the Leon's courses. It has really amazing courses. So my question is, what's your process like whenever you create a course? Because I know that creating a course is not exactly easy. Right now I'm working on a Panda CSS course and it's not easy at all. Like it requires so much from you. So what's your process like when you have to create a course?
Well, I only recently started making courses, and that's because the idea of courses has always frightened me. I feel like it's a lot of work. Some people put out 6 hours courses, 3 hours courses, and I always just made short videos. So I think last year was the first time that I made an attempt to create a course, and there are so many lessons from that course too. But that was the Rejects, the Regular Expressions course. And my process for that was either I make a 3 hours video on Rejects or I make a series of videos. And for me, I decided to go the series route because that gave me more flexibility to, you know, do 3 lessons, publish it and tell people more lessons are coming up next week.
Okay.
And do 3 more and do 3 more until I got to the end. In fact, even with the Rejects course, I think last month I added 1 more lesson. Of course, that lesson was not part of the basics. Like the basics, I've already covered it in the course. But like when I have new advanced topics, I can just add it to the existing course. So I think that process works for me. I don't know. I asked the question recently to some people, like, would you prefer a 1 hour course or a series of lessons in a course? And people shared their ideas. So I'm not really sure which process is better, especially when you start thinking about growth of platforms. But it was something that just worked for me. So I remember when working with the Rejects course, I made like 7 lessons. Then I published it. Then I made 5 lessons. Then I published it. And then I made 1 lesson this week, 1 lesson next week. Then 1 lesson the next month, another lesson the following month. So that was with the Rejects course, and I learned a lot from it. Like one of the things I learned was before I dive into the lesson, I give so much context, which can be boring. Like 2-3 minutes into the lesson, you are still like, when are we going to get to the actual Rejects? So that was one big lesson for me. But then moving now to my TypeScript course, this was also like my first attempt at making like a 1 hour course. So all of this is still kind of try and error for me. So with the TypeScript course, what I did was in my planning, I already broke down the structures, I already had the code, I had the things I wanted to say, and doing that actually helped me though. So I had everything prepared, and then I had my laptop on one side, and then I had my camera and my other laptop, my Mac Mini, on the other side. So basically what I was just doing is, so you know, TypeScript is this and that and this and that. But of course, during editing, I would cut out that part. And then whenever I needed to show a code, I would, if it's something that is short, I can just type it myself. If it's not short, I easily just copy from this laptop and paste it on the other laptop and I go ahead. So that helped me avoid all of the unnecessary context, or not really unnecessary, but just more like the long stories.
Like straight to the point, concise.
Okay. Straight to the point. Like if I'm talking about XYZ, then the code that I'm writing should relate to XYZ. I shouldn't have to take you through A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H until you get to XYZ. So what I would do is I'll copy A to W and paste it. And then for that specific lesson, I can now focus on this is the X part, this is the Y part, this is the Z part. And the funny thing, after doing that 1 hour course, I still went ahead and broke it again into series and uploaded on my channel to kind of see which of them is going to perform
well.
Yeah. So making courses is still a thing I'm getting the hang of. I'm hoping sometime in the near future I can begin to put the price on it. But for now, I'm just focused on making all of these things free while I'm also experimenting what works for me.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I feel like a lot of people do not see the behind the scenes, the work that goes into making your course. What you shared now, my experience or my process to creating a course is more like the second one you shared with your TypeScript video. Mm-hmm. For me, when I was making the Chakra UI course, I kind of had the scripts, what to say. I'd written it for every lesson. I had a code for every lesson. And interestingly, I think at that point, that was my first course, so I wasn't really confident with, you know, saying the scripts and writing the code. So I actually did a voiceover on the code. So it was a lot more work. I was just writing the code, then I did the voiceover, then I now smooshed the two together.
Yeah.
And yeah, it came out really nice. So, but right now, I think I'm more confident. So right now, I'm actually saying it as I'm writing the code without having to do double work. But yeah, that's a very good process.
I think voiceovers are really nice. Sometimes when I want to say one line that is too long, instead of memorizing it, I just look and I just say everything, and then during editing, I'll just put something on the screen so you wouldn't know that I was looking
somewhere. Okay, that's actually a very good tip. Yeah. So if you're doing a voiceover and you're looking, just fill something on the screen. Yeah, I'll probably try that. Okay. So I know that you create lots of videos. Like anytime I come to my Twitter, the timeline, I think at least every single day I would probably see one video from Dillion, whether it's a short form video, it's a long form, something from Dillion. So I guess my question is, how do you find the time to do all of that in between work? So how exactly do you find the time to create lots of content? And it's not just video content. You also write. I saw you write on Log Rocket. So how do you find the time to do that?
Well, writing is something I used to do a lot a couple of years ago. I think since last year, I haven't been doing a lot of writing. I've been more focused on videos. So writing is a bit out of the way. Well, except for my courses, because I like having written version of my courses too. But coming back to what I said earlier, developer education is something that I enjoy doing regardless of what I do full time. Outside my full time job, I like making these videos. I think I was with some friends weeks ago, and then they were asking like, what is your hobbies? And everybody were mentioning like nice hobbies. And then I said my hobby was making videos, and everybody looked at me like, don't you have a life? But honestly, it's something that at least at this point in my life, I'm hoping it's like this for a long time. But at this point in my life, I enjoy making this educational content. So instead of reading, sometimes I'll be making these videos. Also not proud to say this, but sometimes instead of cooking dinner, I'll be making these videos, and then I would have late dinner. But I enjoy making these videos, and I think that is the motivation for me, that I can always find the time after my full-time job in a day, have a nap, have maybe dinner before or after I make a video. Sometimes I also don't do everything in one day. So sometimes it's also like work on the script or the idea today. Then tomorrow I make the video. Sometimes it's I record the video today and then I edit it tomorrow. Another thing I do too is when I make a YouTube video that is like 6-7 minutes long, I could also go from that YouTube video and cut out some parts, and then post that as a video on its own on Twitter, on TikTok, or on Instagram. So I have my ways of like cutting all of these things, merging it. Sometimes it's a very simple idea. Like there are some ideas I just thought of it. I already knew what to do. I just plugged my camera, recorded it, edited it in less than 45 minutes. Everything was ready and the video was still like good. It's still like a good tip that I shared. So over time, I've learned different processes of how to make my life easier with this thing. But for me, it's something that I really enjoy doing. And I think my second motivation also comes from the fact that I want my YouTube channel to grow. I want to be able to get some like substantial income from it too in the future. And I'm also young, so I have youthful energy. So I'm trying to make the most of my energy before I lose it. But I really enjoy making this educational content. And that is really my major drive in the last 4 years since I've been making content.
That's so good to hear. I think for you, it's just the passion, or, you know, the passion that you have for video creation. It shows. And I'd like to ask, how many videos do you make on an average every day? I know you probably do not have that, but if you have to put a number to it, every day, how many videos on an average do you make?
I used to have a crazy life where I was making 3 videos a day. But they were mostly like, they were like 4 or 5 minutes long. Okay. For TikTok, and that wasn't, my life wasn't balanced. So then I started doing 1 video every day. That was last year. So I made sure I always had 1 video every day. But now I give myself grace on these things now. So some weeks, they are very good weeks. I don't have a lot to do outside work. And I'm able to make 1 video every day, sometimes 2. Like sometimes I'm trying to make a video, then in the process of making that video, another idea comes. And instead of merging the 2 ideas into the same video, I'll record this video, then record the next idea. And now I already have a video for 2 days. But now I think I'm not very like 1 video every day anymore. But if I'm having a free evening in my house after work, I am most likely thinking of a video. Before I used to be distracted with my PS5, but I give my controller to my friend. So now I don't have distractions. So if I'm free, I'm making a video, but it's not a hard. Previously, it used to be 1 video every day. It's a must. But now it's more of, do I have the time for this? I mean, I'm also trying to pay attention to other areas in my life too. So it's part of the new decisions I've been making in the last couple of months.
Nice. And I know you also post on TikTok. At least the last time I was on TikTok, I know you post regularly. TikTok, yeah. I've tried TikTok and I don't know, maybe it's just a me thing, but I just decided for now to focus all my energy on YouTube, and I think it has been going really great. So how do you really manage posting on TikTok, posting on YouTube, posting on LinkedIn, posting on Twitter? It's a lot. So how is that process like for you?
Before, when I had a crazy life, I used to make different videos for all these platforms. Like in a day, I would make one that goes to TikTok and Instagram. I would make one that goes to LinkedIn. I would make one that goes to YouTube, one that goes to Twitter. So I was really trying to serve all of this platform at once, but the reason for this is because TikTok, if your video is within 2-3 minutes, it's nice. On Instagram, if you want your video to be a reel, it has to be 1 minute 30 seconds. I don't really know how LinkedIn works. With Twitter, you have 2 minutes and 20 seconds unless you want to break the video into multiple posts. So I think for me, it was because I was trying to serve all these platforms. That was why I was working extra hard to break the times. But after some time, I just felt like I don't care. So if I make a video and I put it on TikTok, I don't care if the video is 4 minutes or 5 minutes. I'm going to post it on LinkedIn. I'm going to post it on Twitter. I'm going to post it on Instagram. Wherever it performs best, that's fine. So now I only focus on making 2 forms of videos, one for YouTube and one for TikTok. Whatever is on TikTok goes to the rest. And because YouTube is more landscape, then I have to do a separate YouTube. But then sometimes when I make a YouTube, I don't even have to record for the rest anymore. I can just cut the specific part, reframe everything. And then that same video can go on TikTok and the remaining platforms. So that is how I do it now. I have this kind of mindset of like, I have audiences in different places. I don't know who is watching. There was a video I made recently, it blew on TikTok. Well, I mean, blew like 8,000 views, but it blew on TikTok.
You too.
Yeah. And then on LinkedIn, it didn't do well. And on Twitter, it was just 30 likes. And I'm like, don't you people see the content I just created? So for me, I just feel like you never know where these videos are going to reach the most people. Some people tell me, oh, I found you from LinkedIn, I found you from Instagram, and I just love the idea that I can reach multiple people. But yeah, this is the scalable way I found for myself right now. Instead of focusing on different platforms and their strengths, I know I don't have the time for that now since I have a full-time job. So did I make a 1 minute video? It's nice. It has good potential on all these platforms. Did I make a 3 minute video? I know, okay, this may not have a lot of potential on Instagram, but I don't care. I'll still post it anyways. And again, coming back to the fact that I don't have to make video every day. So I'm probably making a YouTube video today, and then tomorrow I'm focusing on a TikTok video.
Nice. Really sounds like a plan. Very productive and efficient way to make videos.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving away from video creation, let's go back to like your school. What did you study in school and how did you find yourself in web development, this space? What did you study? Some people studied other things, like me. I studied mechanical engineering, but I'm in web dev. So yeah. What did you study?
I studied computer science, but
You're one of those people with a computer science background.
It was actually never my plan to study computer science. Always had fantasies about making robots, you know, kind of the AI robots we had now. Those were the fantasies I had before. You have robots that cook for you, that fix things for you, and washes the dishes for you, all those things. But then the course that I found that could allow me do that was a course called mechatronics. It's okay. A combination of mechanical, electronics,
and electronics. Yeah, we had a course on that, mechatronics, in year 2.
Yeah, I wanted to study that, but I didn't see. I only saw a few schools that were doing that. So, my mom, a friend of mine, called this mom math. My mom math was that I should do electrical for bachelor's, then for master's I do mechanical. Then at the end of the day, it is
you combine it too.
Yeah,
that's so smart.
So I wanted to study electrical, but the schools weren't giving me electrical, and then Kwara State University gave me computer science, and I felt like, okay, not bad, let's see where this goes. And then as time went on, I fell in love with the computer science. And when I also graduated after 4 years and seeing that some of my friends were still staying for their fifth year for electrical, I was like, wow, thank God I didn't do electrical. I'll still be in school by now. But yeah, I did computer science, and then I fell in love with, a friend introduced me to web development. I fell in love with it. It was even so funny because as at the time we were learning PHP in school, I already knew PHP because I was already watching videos, tutorials, and all those things. As at the time we were doing JavaScript, I already knew JavaScript. So yeah, I fell in love with it. And as time went on, I pursued a career in it. I also started teaching web development. So I think everything just fell in line nicely for me, but computer science wasn't really my goal at the beginning.
And did you, for web development in particular, did you have to, aside the videos you watched, did you have to attend any boot camp, or it was just more like self-taught?
It was more the self-taught approach, just videos, building projects on my own, the typical tutorial hell. It was mostly just videos. There was a time where I had 6 hours videos, 3 hours videos, 10 hours videos on my laptop. I didn't watch everything, but I was really jumping from one tutorial to the other. So it was more that approach than any, yeah. If I probably knew there was a bootcamp, maybe I would have tried. But then I wasn't exposed to these things. So I was just doing it the way I thought I could do it.
But yeah, that makes sense. For me, I attended a bootcamp, and I think it was very helpful because, you know, when you're learning web development, you can kind of feel alone trying to figure out lots of things by yourself. So the bootcamp gave us somewhat a community, so you don't feel like you're the only one that doesn't understand the concept. I remember when they were teaching us, was it Redux, and it was just mind-bending. But I think I felt good because I knew I wasn't the only one that didn't understand it. So I would say those are one of the things that boot camps help. But definitely, I also like the self-taught approach. Take it at your own pace and just learn from different people. So what are some of your favorite YouTubers that really explain things to you? I have one. I think one of the people that really helped me understand how to, you know, how to write React was Codevolution. His name is Vishwas. I really like the way he broke down everything. So shout out to Vishwas. He really helped me on my React journey. So do you have some people that, you know, some really good YouTubers that people can learn from as well?
Before I answer that, one more thing I wanted to add to that self-taught approach. I think what also helped me was the fact that I mean, there's a good side and bad side. The good side was not being exposed to maybe Twitter, all of this information. It made me have less pressure on myself. So I was able to go at my own pace. I didn't even know people were making thousands of dollars on this thing. Maybe if I knew, I would have taken it more serious. But I think not being exposed to that just gave me that opportunity to just go at my own pace, learn my own things, build my own funny projects. But I see this pattern nowadays where, you know, for some people, learning in 2 months is too small for them. It's too big for them. They would want to just learn in 1 month and be able to make money immediately. Well, I mean, I'm exaggerating a bit.
I know you're exaggerating, but like, even learning, I feel like learning web development in 6 months is still very you still need more time. 6 months is not enough time to
some people believe like, that's know the too basics. Much that's right. too much. Like you see them doing work for a few months and they already say I haven't gotten a job yet, and well, I know that the economy is also tight, but I think when I look at my own journey, I just see that difference in how I wasn't pressured. I didn't know people were making thousands or millions from this thing. So I was going at my pace and I got exposed, let me say, at the right time when I had already passed that basics level. That was something that really helped me in my self-taught journey. But of course, there are a lot of people I learned from. I remember learning React from, I still struggle in pronouncing his name. I think his first name is Maximilian.
Maximilian.
I can't remember, but he was the one I learned React from. I remember buying that Udemy course, and he really taught me React, and I think it was just a good start into the React world and then trying to like build project and learn those things. Aside that, West Boss, of course, he's very popular. Code Ninja. So the thing is, I didn't have, apart from Maximilian, who I really enjoyed his courses, I didn't have any other specific teacher. I just go on YouTube and say, getting started with CSS, getting started with SAS, getting started with TypeScript, all of these things. And the first few videos that pop out, I select from there. So for me, it wasn't really I learned from only this person. I enjoyed a lot of videos. So apart from Wes Boss, Code Ninja, there were a lot of people, so I'm also leaving some names out, but Maximilian really, I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing his name wrong, but it really stood out to me in learning React, because that course really gave me a good start to what React was, states, global state management, and all those things. And from there, I took off with my regular going on YouTube and searching random React videos.
Nice. I actually also got the Maximilian course from Udemy, and though I watched it in bits, I didn't focus on learning everything, but I watched a couple of it and it was really helpful for me as well. How was the journey from learning to getting your first job? Your first job was a front-end engineering role? What was that process or transition from learning? Did you feel confident enough to apply to that job, or you still felt like, I may not be this good, maybe I still need to learn some more? So how was that for you in terms of your confidence level, knowing that you were self-taught and even going through the interview steps?
From learning, I think there were three freelance projects I worked on. Okay. One of them was on Upwork. if I'm to do that project again, I would definitely do it better than I did. it was a full stack project. So I worked on the back end side and the front end side. And I can tell you, working on that project, I didn't take things like security into mind. I just did like basic authentication. But the client was satisfied. So
that's all that matters.
But I also worked on this front end project with a guy. He was building this big startup and I was part of it. And then I also worked on another project with this other client. I think that was Next.js. Of course, that was still when Next.js was still using the Pages router. The Pages directory. I think working on those projects, there are a lot of things I could have done better. There are a lot of ways I would have managed my time. But those projects kind of gave me an idea of what kind of project I'll be working on, especially the fact that I was working with people. That was where I had to start learning, you know, Git and how to collaborate with others. So I feel like those projects gave me a good start. And then I also picked up my own personal projects here and there. None of them became startups, unfortunately. But I picked up some projects here and there. So I think that gave me this start where I came to a point where I could say that I don't know everything in CSS, but if I see a web page, I can already think in my head that, okay, flex, I can use a flex to achieve this. I can use a gradient to achieve that. This animation is so crazy. I have no idea how to achieve that. So I think I just came to that point where I could say, like, when you talk about front end, I mean, not talking about things like performance or like web page metrics. Not talking about those other areas, but coming to like the visual part, I came to that point where I felt like, as bad as it may be, there is Google and I can figure my way around Google. So for my first job, I think it was that same confidence I brought in. Of course, there was still a lot more that I could learn professionally, which was also why I was looking for a full-time job, because I felt like I had been growing more in isolation than in a professional space. I had a lot of confidence on my first row, but of course, getting to my first row, that was when I began to learn that, you know, beyond just the skills that you have, there are also other parts of it too. Like sometimes you may work on projects you're not very excited about, you may use tools you're not very excited about, and all of this is important because the company has to make money, right? Yeah. So I think that transition for me was like the freelance project and the fact that I was already teaching some of these things with articles. I think all of that helped me build some confidence to be able to say, like, if it comes to React, if it comes to HTML, CSS, JavaScript, I'm good. When you begin to look at Node.js, I can do some CRUD. When you begin to look at TypeScript, I can do a few types here and there. But React, JavaScript, HTML, CSS, I'm very good. So that was the confidence I worked with to get my first front-end job.
I love the fact that you actually had a freelance job before the, you know, the final first job. For me, it was the same. I was posting my learnings from bootcamp on LinkedIn at that point, and I think someone just reached out to me. We attended the same uni, so he reached out to me and was like, he wants me to build a website for their church. And I was like, okay. I was still very new to this whole web dev space, but I was like, okay, this would be an interesting challenge. And eventually it took me longer than I probably thought it would take me, but I was so proud of myself, because even up till today, the website is still there. Definitely. Oh. If I have to do it now, I would probably change, you know, I would change a few things, but just knowing that I was able to create a website, it gave me so much confidence to then apply for my next job. So for anyone watching, if you're learning, just try to, you know, do something, be proactive in getting that first client. Even if it's a freelance gig, you can go all the way to complete a freelance gig. It'll really help you boost your confidence for your first job. One thing I also want to ask about is your faith. I love how you're very open about your faith, sharing videos on things in the Bible. So how has your faith really impacted your career, if you have to speak about it?
I think when I think about my faith and also how it ties into my work, you know, some of the questions that I have asked is like, you know, how can you be a Christian in the workplace? should you like be preaching Christ to all your colleagues? I mean, there is that, you could do that. I don't think I'm very confident in doing that. I mean, having one-on-one conversations, yes. But I think one of the ways it also ties is also in how you approach people and how you approach things, and also my work ethics. Like, making a video that is just clickbait, that is like the title is a lie and the video itself is something else, that's something that I struggle with doing. And this is because of the foundation of my faith and how it influences my morals or my work ethics. So I think in that sense, it influences the decisions that I make in the workplace, in how I approach people, in how I approach things, in how I approach even negative comments that I get sometimes on videos. Like, I get some very crazy comments, and before, those kind of comments would get to me, and you know, I would probably want to be angry and say bad about this person. But again, based on those morals that I have, I won't be able to comfortably do this. I probably do it and then 2 minutes later I delete the message. So yeah, I think that is how it influences a lot of the things that I do. And I'm also very vocal about it because I'm proud of it. But there have been times too where I've asked myself, like, do I want to put my faith along with these videos? Like, it will probably make some people stop watching. But I think in those times where those thoughts come, I remind myself again that it's better I'm pleasing God than pleasing people. So if people are not going to watch my videos or unfollow, well, that is better than losing the respect or the place I have with God. So yeah, I think that is just how my faith influences most of the decisions that I make. In the videos that I make, sometimes if I'm making a video, it's so funny that when I'm making a video and then I'm touching a specific topic, and then I feel like I haven't done justice to this topic yet. Trying to jump to the next topic is also like a battle for me, because I feel like I am deceiving people. I just made this topic so they would watch my account. So in that sense, it also makes me want to like do more research, or even sometimes abandon some video ideas, or maybe I put like more details on this in the comment section or something. So it really influences how I approach the people who watch my videos and the things I do, the things I say, how I approach critics. And generally, I also love sharing my faith, because there's a lot of things I'm learning in my faith. And in that same idea of sharing what I know, I also like doing that for my faith. I mean, I also share things related to culture in the Netherlands. So I basically like sharing things in my life, and
in your life,
my faith is the biggest part of my life too. So I'm not going to leave that out.
Yeah, it's definitely encouraging to see you. I think it also motivates me to do similar as well, because that's nice. Something that it's a huge part of my life outside of Twitter and work. My faith is a huge part of my life, so it's definitely something that I would also want to do more of. All right, moving over to your stay in Netherlands, how long have you been in Netherlands, first off?
I've been here 2 years now.
Okay, how did you move? Was it through a job, or how did you move from Nigeria to Netherlands?
My previous... Sorry, do you hear that sound? Oh, I'm so sorry. My previous job brought me over here. It actually came at the point I didn't think... I thought I'll probably still have to spend like more years before I'll be able to get such a relocation opportunity. But it came at the time where I was done with school, already focusing on my career. So it was good timing, and I've been here for more than 2 years now.
Interesting. Netherlands was actually the country that I first visited when I was like in Nigeria. Yeah, Netherlands. I think we went to Rotterdam. That was about 10 years ago. So what city do you stay in right now?
I stay in Amsterdam now.
Oh, okay. Okay. Amsterdam is like one of the major cities too.
Yeah.
So when you moved, did you face any particular culture shock? I know that there was one particular video that you posted that was on Insta blog about trash or something.
Yeah.
That was a while back. So outside of like the, I think that video was about what, arranging your trash in different containers, right?
Yeah,
so tell us more about that, and what else was the culture shock, and you know, the difference between living in Nigeria and living in the Netherlands?
There are a lot of them. I feel like I could keep going on and on. The trash one was pretty funny because back home we have like this refuse dump, which is like, it's a whole dump, you know, anybody can add things there and sometimes people burn it away. But then here there are specific cans for specific trash. Where you put your cartons is different. Where you put your clothes that you want to throw away is different. I mean, in some areas you can put all of these things in one place, but in some other areas there are different boxes for it. And so there I wanted to dump my trash, but then the box was full, and then I saw that other people already put their boxes, their cartons on the floor. So I kind of felt like, okay, if it's full and the people who live here are doing this, then I should be able to
and
do
as
it
well
too.
Do this.
So I dumped my carton there. But then there was something those people did that I didn't do. They removed their name from the cartons. But I
so
didn't.
So you wouldn't be able to locate them, but
yeah.
You...
So they won't be able to locate them because these are cartons you get from deliveries. I didn't remove mine because I didn't feel like I was doing anything bad. Well, when they came to pick the cartons, the people who take care of these things, they picked my carton, they saw my name, and it had my name, it had my address. So it was very easy for them to send a mail like, hey, you have to pay us 100 euros. And if you don't pay, it's going to increase. So that was what happened there. And it was also so funny because when it got on Instablog, a lot of people said things. They said, I deserve it. I was trying to bring my Nigerian mindset to the Netherlands, that I deserved the fine and all of those things. And it's so funny
people
because...
People can be so hurtful. Like, they do not even have the context.
I put that to educate people. Like, guys, I make this mistake. Don't make it. But everybody was like, yes, you deserve the punishment. Now it was a crazy time. But these are the different cultures. Back home, you could park your car wherever there is space. But here, you can't do that. You can only park your car in parking spaces. If you park it in the wrong place, you get a fine. If you park it in a place for more than the time you're supposed to park it, you get a fine. So yeah, that was also a big culture shock. I mean, it's nice, it keeps the road safe and free. Another culture shock was coming here and seeing, like, in the night you can see somebody's curtains open, like you can literally see everything in the living room. That was crazy. Back home, we only leave our curtains open during the day.
Yeah.
And once it's getting late, nobody should
know.
Parents
are like, close the curtain, close the curtain. I even have blinds before the curtain. Yeah. So it's like, everything has to be closed.
But then here, you're walking by and you can already see this family has two TVs. They have a dog. They have a cat. They have this. I mean, sometimes you even see like, they're even like making out and you're like, why are you not hiding this? Why are you showing everybody? So
everything is so open, right?
Everything is so open. Yeah, it almost feels like, I mean, this is not very true, but almost feels like they're not hiding anything. Like, look at us. What's our business? But that was also a culture shock. There are so many of them. I'm just trying to think of the ones that come to mind.
But a lot of food, was there like real shock with the food?
Anywhere.
One thing I remember vividly at that time was that they don't eat pepper, and as my Nigerian self, I love pepper, so I just couldn't cope with the no pepper thing.
Yeah. Difference is even what you call peppery food is what they call spicy food. So when they tell me spicy food, I'm thinking, oh, you're adding Maggi, curry, you're adding all this spice.
Yeah.
But spicy food for them is food with pepper.
Pepper.
So that was just something I had to get used to, that when somebody says a food is hot, is spicy, they don't mean the food is delicious. They mean it's peppery.
It's peppery, yeah.
Yeah. So there is that. And also the fact that if the Dutch people tell you they're having breakfast or they're having lunch, it's bread and cheese. It's there were times where I was going for a gathering and they said, there's going to be lunch. And I was so excited. I didn't cook that day. I was like, oh, free lunch. Then I got there and it was bread, cheese, ham, butter. It was bread was the main thing. And I'm like, you should have specified that it's bread and cheese. Don't say it's lunch. But they really like bread over here. It even took me some time to find a bread that I like, because there are so many flavors of bread. And now I've found one bread, which is a bit expensive, but it's kind of the only bread that I can eat. So it was one of the things I had to make peace with, that I would have to keep spending money on bread.
Okay, yeah. We are gradually wrapping up now. I would just love to know, for anyone maybe visiting Netherlands like myself again, what are some exciting places, like three exciting places that you would recommend they visit?
Netherlands. I'm not an adventurous person, so not the best person to ask this.
Let's see. You've been out definitely in 2 years now, so yeah. Let's see what you can recommend.
Yeah. Do you just mean places or things you can do?
Any of them, things you can do, places, anything interesting or adventurous.
Well, the first thing you could do is just go in the train and travel the city. Most of the cities are really connected and it's just like a train from here to there. So I would definitely recommend that. I think it's even something I'm still thinking of doing, where I just go into the train, just check out another city, just walk around there, get lost, use Google Maps, find my way back. But the transportation is really good here. So I would definitely recommend like just checking out whatever is happening. There's also this place, I think they call it Flowland. I forgot the name of the city, but it's a city that was actually created from water. Like, the place was water all through, and then they sort of, I don't know what the process was, but they actually brought a city out of that water. So it's Flevoland, I think so. It's a city I want to check out. I haven't checked out yet, but I think it's also something exciting. You can go there, read up the history about how the city came to be. Biking is also nice. It's really nice that this place has like biking routes in so many parts of the city. So you can choose to walk around the city if you want, but it's also fun to just bike and try not to hit someone because run into bills. But I think biking is another fun thing to do. Sorry, I'm not having a lot of ideas in my mind, but I'm also
You mentioned like the train, Lowland, that place, and biking. Yeah, I know they ride lots of bikes there as well. So
yeah, that was a culture shock too. Bikes that I know is for fun. You take first in class, your dad buys you a bike. But here, it's a means of transport.
Transportation, Okay. Yeah, Dillion, thank you so much for, you know, taking your time out of your busy schedule to come for this podcast. Your busy video creation schedule. But I think my final question is, to anyone that is looking to chart a path for themselves as a developer educator, like they really admire you creating YouTube videos, creating courses, you know, creating content in the web dev space, what advice do you have for them?
When it comes to video or education in general, I think it's something that can benefit you regardless of whatever you do. Even if you're not going to work in a role that requires you to write articles or make videos, I think, like for me, making all of these videos, building all of this content, it has really helped how I speak, helped how I teach, also helped how I communicate in my team. Yeah. So I think it's a skill that is transferable in so many ways, even if you don't get to do it full time. So the one way you can look at it is, I mean, you can also look at it as, okay, this is a means of income. I can make money from my YouTube someday. That's also fine. But I think one way to also look at these things is it can really help you in so many ways. There are interviews I've had where, unfortunately, I didn't make it. But then you hear this comment of like, you know, the fact that you teach was an advantage. And I mean, considering the fact that we get generic rejection emails these days, getting very specific rejection emails can be interesting. Like, okay, you saw that. I don't know how many videos you watched, but you saw that I do something.
Yeah.
So I think it's a skill that can be transferable in so many ways, and it can help you a lot, because when you want to do a job, there is the part where you have to write the code, but there's also the part where you have to communicate. And in some cases, there's a part where you have to teach others. These are the skills that can really help you in such cases. So there is a lot to developer education, or even education in whatever career you have. So don't just think about the financial part of it, but also think about the soft skills that it can help you. And another thing too is, most of the things I've learned in tech, I've learned it from building projects, but I've also learned it from like teaching. Sometimes I'm teaching and new ideas come and I'm like, oh, why is this even this way in JavaScript? Then I go to research it, and in that way I'm building up even more knowledge. So there are a lot of benefits to making education. So I don't just want to give an advice of like, consider it as a career, but my advice is more, consider it as something that is just a part of, well, let me not say part of your life. You probably have a more exciting life than I do, but more like a supplement to your career, regardless of what your career is, back end, front end, full stack, security. It's kind of that added supplement, and it's also something that can also help you with your network. Most of the people who know me today, they know me from reading one article, then they found out, oh, I'm in the same group chat with them, or they see me on Twitter, and from there some of these networks are formed. So there are a lot of beautiful things to it in your career. So even if it's not something you want to do full time, I'd recommend that you consider doing it. Start with something you can. Start with writing, with videos. I watch some of the videos I make when I started and I cringe. I'm not even gonna lie. Like, I hear the sound and I'm like, what? Like, how did people watch this video?
Yeah, but, I know that feeling.
Yeah, but then I watch my videos now and I'm like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. But I didn't just start making these videos like immediately. It took me a process of identifying, how can I improve the sound? How can I improve the video? How can I go straight to the point without telling stories? Oh, putting the code somewhere, copy and paste, that makes things easy. Writing scripts, that makes things easy. Identifying all of these things came during the process. So also don't think your first article or your first video will be fine. And it's totally fine if people laugh at you, or if you also cringe at your own thing. But a few months or a few years from now, you'll probably not be cringing so much at your work anymore. So start with what you have. Yeah, that's what I'll end with.
Absolutely. That is solid advice. Solid advice. Thank you, Dillion, again. And yeah, definitely, this has been a fun conversation, and I look forward to when it's live.
Yeah. Thanks again for inviting me. I was also looking on my calendar for when it would be, so it's nice that we could finally do it today. I'm also on holiday today. I don't know if that's the same everywhere. So
no, it's not.
Yeah, so I was able to rest and also have this. And coming back to the bucket list, yes.
Oh, okay.
I want to learn how to drive. I actually want to learn how to drive this year. Okay. I don't plan on owning a car, because owning a car is a lot over here. Where to park, where to pay, when the car gets bought. No.
But just
owning a car, to be able to rent the car, there is that. Now that I can't think of anything, I also, well, another thing on my bucket list is growing my channel. I don't know if that's a bucket list thing, but
yeah, it is definitely something. Growing my channel.
I'm gradually getting to 10K and I'm so excited.
Yay.
Yeah. And
I'm going to put the link to your channel in the description box of this video. So nice. If you want to find Dillion here.
Yeah. Third thing is, swimming. I also want to learn how to swim. Maybe not the top on the bucket, but it's something I also
Somewhere in the bucket.
Somewhere in the bucket, yeah.
Okay. That should be fun, definitely. Definitely. I'll probably see your videos when you start learning how to drive or swim or any of the things that you're doing.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, I did.
Thanks for inviting.
Yeah, same here, I did. See ya. Bye, right, everyone.
Bye. Yeah.